I think the load of a mother, being a small business owner, the grind like really never stops. But I feel like when I'm out on the golf course, I'm so separated and removed from the speed of everyday life that it really helps me slow down and then show up better in other avenues of life. So like, I honestly say to people all the time that, you know, for me, golf has helped me show up as a better mother, a better coach, because I have that time to separate and really pour into myself on the golf course.
Welcome to Golf Yourself Healthy, the podcast which invites guests from all corners of the golf, health, and well-being industry to share inspiring stories and practical insights on how we can be at our best mentally, physically, and socially, both on and off the golf course. I'm Chris Lynch, your host and the founder of GYH, where it is our mission to help you live happier, healthier, and more fulfilled lives through the power of golf. If that sounds like a movement and a community that you would like to be a part of, then head to golfyourselfhealthy.com and subscribe now. Today's guest, Sarah Fitzpatrick, is a woman who possesses multiple talents and wears many hats. Besides being a proud mother to her daughter Jameson and wife to her husband Austin, she is an entrepreneur, a golfer, and a passionate advocate for health and well-being. In her capacity as a wellness coach based in Florida, she works one-to-one with her clients to help them build healthy habits and to transform their lifestyle and nutrition choices. If you listen carefully, you're going to hear some incredibly insightful advice from Sarah around goal setting, which is most definitely relevant to your game of golf as much as it's relevant to your health and well-being also. Beyond her passion for wellness, she is also an ambitious and driven entrepreneur who, alongside her business partners, are blazing a trail in the golf industry with their highly innovative product, Marker Locker, an accessory which hangs neatly on the side of your golf bag and brings order to your ball marker collection. For those of you watching this episode on YouTube, stick around for the final section of this episode to see Sarah and I giving a demo of our lockers and the personal meaning behind each of the markers we have stored in them. What I especially loved about this conversation with Sarah was the way in which she prioritizes fun and family in everything that she does, whether that's at home, out on the golf course, or in business. Heaven knows, our lives are filled with all manner of stresses, strains, and distractions these days, so perhaps we could all take a leaf out of Sarah's book when it comes to our approach to golf as well as our approach to life. That is, to have fun, be present, and simply enjoy the ride. Without any further ado, let's tee off and jump into the conversation. Sarah Fitzpatrick, welcome to the Golf Yourself Healthy podcast.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Do you remember your first experience of golf? What made it special or unique or funny, or how do you remember?
Yeah. So I won't say that I can like remember the moment in itself, but my mom was really big into photographs and scrapbooking. She captured every moment. It's probably why I do the same. In a lot of my baby albums, there are photos of me at like the age of 6 months, 9 months, a year. My mom and dad golfed often. They grew up down in South Florida, Pompano Beach, Deerfield area. And so huge culture of South Florida to golf. And so at a very young age, me in a diaper and a little onesie, out on the putting green next to the tee or next to the flag. So there's multiple pictures like that. And so when I think back to, okay, I started really young, I should be a lot better, but no, I started really young. Now that I have my daughter, like we want to like see that full circle moment, with her as well. But yeah, I would say that's probably like my first. It's just like, I almost grew up on a golf car, course in a way.
Yeah. Like you say, in the part of the world that you're in, there's golf everywhere you look, really. Or at least certainly me is the obsessed golfer. Every time I visit Florida to see my sister-in-law, who, as I mentioned to you, lives there, it's like, I'm like a kid in a candy shop. I'm driving around like, there's another one. 2 minutes later, there's another one. It's like, I can't possibly play all of these, you know. So your daughter, how old is she?
She is 4 years old. Her name is Jameson. We call her JJ. And literally, it's my husband's pride and joy to ask her what she wants to be when she grows up. And right now, she is telling everyone she wants to be a golfer. She will ask us throughout the day, what are we doing today? Do we want to go golfing? We are loving this stage of life for her, and she definitely gets us out there a little bit more than, you know, we would do if we didn't have her telling us, hey, let's go golfing.
Well, I really, really need to ask you more about this, okay? Because my daughter, Neris, is 7.5 months old now. And I'd be lying to you, Sarah, if I was to say to you that I'm not plotting and planning mm-hmm. out the point in time where I get her on the golf course. I haven't yet figured when the appropriate time is for that. But, with Jameson, is that, like, has she genuinely taken to that herself naturally, or have you and your husband almost, like, you know, planted a seed? Have you just introduced her to it and she's taken to it, or is it almost like we are actively trying to get our daughter into golf? Like, which of those, where in that spectrum?
That's a good question. So I almost feel like, and I'll apply this to, like, health and wellness too, right? Like, my daughter eats healthy because we've modeled what that looks like. And it's just second nature. Like, there's almost like not even a questioning about eating my vegetables. That's just like what we do. And I think the same almost applies for golf because she sees us playing and us talking about it, enjoying it. We also have a putting green in our backyard, which does help sell a little bit. So we're out there putting and she's playing, and then she picks up the ball in the, you know, her little club and plays alongside us. So I think that, you know, that modeling behavior and seeing the joy that we have out of it, she just wants to be in on it with us. So, I mean, maybe we are pushing it a little bit in a, like, way we don't realize, but, you know, I think she's just picking up on it naturally as something that she sees to bring joy to our lives and hers.
Yeah, it doesn't sound to me like you're pushing it too much. I'm pretty confident that any parent, or I'd like to think, maybe I've got too much faith in worldwide parenting here, but I'd like to think you would know when someone's, you know, when you're forcing it, when you're, like, literally, if they're kicking and screaming and going against their will or whatever, and it's more a self-serving thing. But it sounds very much like you've got a lovely dynamic going on there. Not jealous at all that you've got a putting green or whatever in your back garden. Today, why do you play golf? What does it do for you? What does it mean to you?
Funny, when we were chatting earlier about, you know, Jameson and her relationship with golf. So as I grew up, my dad and I played often. I did lessons. I got to my teenage years and I was like, this sport is boring and slow, and I wanted to play other things. And he was kind of the one pushing, like, you should stay with this sport. You're kind of good at it. Like, come on. And I, like, pretty much threw that in the towel and was like, no, I want to play other things. So pause for a good handful of years. And then I met my husband in college, and he played golf. And so I kind of started to dabble in it, obviously, like, oh, you're going to go to the range, I'll go with you, show off a little bit. But I was so rusty. I mean, I hadn't played in 6 to 8 years at that point. So I started to take some lessons and stuff then. And I got good enough that when we got married, you know, I just wanted to be able to, like, hold my own when we travel. And when we did play, I called it once a quarter. We didn't play often. But now, as a mom, and obviously being in the entrepreneur space in the golf industry, that helps. But for me, really, it's the value of being able to have time for myself. I think the load of a mother, being a small business owner, the grind, like, really never stops. But I feel like when I'm out on the golf course, I'm so separated and removed from the speed of everyday life that it really helps me slow down and then show up better in other avenues of life. So, like, I honestly say to people all the time that, you know, for me, golf has helped me show up as a better mother, a better coach, because I have that time to separate and really pour into myself on the golf course. And it's been really rewarding, I think, as well, to you know, be a former athlete, fairly competitive, and, you know, be almost in my 40s now and be learning and refining my skills. Like, that doesn't happen really often as an adult. So to be able to have something like that, that challenges you mentally, physically, is really, I think, pretty powerful.
Something you said earlier on, and when I asked you that question right back at the start of your response, you said, you know, there was a point in time early on, you know, your dad had introduced you, or you played with your dad, then you found it boring. And then there was that gap, and then you picked it up again. What was it that made it boring for you at that point in time where you said that?
Yeah, maybe it was like just teenage rebellion, like in reflection. And I, to your point of, are we maybe pushing it on Jameson or not? Like, I think my dad was really passionate about me playing. And I think he saw the longevity in the sport, and so do we. And I think that's part of why we really do hope that Jameson takes to the sport. So I think it's tiered with that, but also as a teenager, right? Like, we're chasing like what's new and exciting and fast paced. And I was playing volleyball at the time. So like, for me, it was, I wanted something that was going to be fast paced and engaging. And it also may have been just a little bit of that culture at the time. Like, there wasn't a huge female drive for golf, right? You know, I was back in the 90s, right? Of, it wasn't the coolest thing to do at the time, maybe. So yeah, I don't know, maybe some layers to that, something to unpack with myself. Yeah.
How do you see that drive for female participation in golf? Because the US Open, men's US Open, was on just the other week. And when I was watching the coverage, it kept popping up in the bottom right-hand corner, like how the USGA are doing this big, big drive at the moment on. So how do you feel about that? Do you see a positive difference now versus back when you first started in terms of the drive for it?
Oh, yeah. Hands down. Yeah. So another, I guess, maybe push for me to get back into the industry was when we attended our first PGA show in Orlando with the Marker Locker. I went, and at that time we were about a year into our business, and it was my husband's brainchild. He called up his two best friends and they went into business together. And I was kind of like the behind the scenes, whatever help you needed, I'm going to do it, right? We're here for bringing this to life. And so I went and attended, and I worked our table while they went and networked at certain meetings. They had presentations to do. And while I was there, I kind of had this like, oh man, like, this is fairly male dominated, but there are pockets of women who are here and really like thriving, like multiple small businesses, like female owned in the golf industry. And I got a little glimmer of like, oh, the dynamic here is really shifting. And also, I think I started to fully embrace like playing more, being in the sport again. And then I realized like there are women's leagues everywhere. Like there's, when I go out to play with Austin, I mean, like there's plenty of women on the course. And so I'm definitely seeing a shift. And I think even the stats share that too, like that, like females in the sport of golf, or who are picking up golf clubs for the first time, are drastically increasing year after year. And it's pretty empowering, honestly, to, you know, be here and be in that space with them.
What's your take on, or approach to, or philosophy to goal setting, Sarah, as it relates to maybe golf and then wellness generally?
So I actually like to kind of approach health and wellness goals continuously. So I think a lot of people have these like common opportunities, like New Year, let's sit down and set our goals for the year. I don't think that's applicable. I think we go through many seasonal changes throughout our lives, that goals have to be fluid, and it's okay to be able to say, hey, this one has to pause and I'm shifting something else in. So I do think that just continuous conversation and assessment are vital to ensuring that you get behavior change. And that's ultimately for me what I'm striving for. I think goals are great, but goals are meant to help generate behavior change and then behavior transformation. And so when I think about goals, I like to use them as a stepping stone to then create your action plans. And for me, the most relevant is to ensure that we have action plans and habits in place that will then generate results to give you your goals. And so I'll use my 100, for example. That's the goal. But if I get out and I practice and I improve my chip shots and I'm consistent in what I say I'm going to do, but I never hit under 100, am I not meeting my goal? So that's where I feel like goals sometimes aren't necessarily the end all be all. I do think the behaviors and the action steps that go with them are more relevant than anything else.
Mm.
If that makes sense.
It totally does. What have you learned through your wellness coaching, Sarah, about behavior change? What are the key things we should know about that? Yeah.
Yeah. Behavior changes everything. You know, if we aren't, first off, willing to make change, change will never happen. So there has to be that willingness and then the readiness to actually take action for change. And then the big thing is like with behavior change is recognizing that you're going to have barriers. There's going to be challenges and it's how do you overcome that to continue forward? And then the reality is if we're stretching or working towards a behavior change, it takes 6 months for that to happen. Like it's not 21 days like everyone hears out there. It is not a 21 day fix to like, you know, improve your hydration or change your diet. It's to build self-efficacy and behavior change that will last you a lifetime. It's a 6 month change.
Let's talk more about that. That fascinates me a lot because that 21 day thing I've heard mentioned in passing in recent times. I've seen it written in books, I've whatever. So where, yeah, like what is it about the 6 months or rather what is it about the 21 days thing that actually makes that potentially a flawed argument?
So I think that 21 days is when the habit starts to click for you. Like at that 21 day mark is when you're no longer having to be like forcefully thinking about what that habit or action is. So for example, right, like you're trying to drink water. You've probably got your reminders. You've got your like jug here. And I know I need to drink my full jug by this time. So at that 21 day mark, the concept is like, I'm starting to do it. I'm consistent with it. But that period afterwards, we'll call it like the 3 month, you now probably experienced hurdles, hiccups, those barriers that are meant to steer you off plan. And did you continue on past that barrier and handle that struggle well? It doesn't even need to be great, but you handled it and you continued forward. That's where you're now starting to build self-efficacy. And then they say, hey, at the, you know, 3 month and now 6 month period, I don't need support systems. I don't need my reminders. I don't need the accountability of a coach. At this point, it's part of my nature and it's like what I do. But reality is like sometimes you get on your way and 2 years down the line it falls off plan and here you go again and you're having to start fresh again. Like, and there's no knock to that, because the reality is in the health and wellness world, like we all know, there's like 100 different things that you can do for your health and wellness. So it's very cyclical.
All right. So love the example about the water. I'm so glad you brought that one up, right? Because that is, in terms of healthy habits, like everyone pretty much knows about the benefit or have a, at the very least, a loose sense of, or the concept of drinking water is vital or good for you is, as far as healthy habits go, that's pretty much well known across the board. However, I have never cracked that in my lifetime, right? So I would much prefer to drink loads of coffee or soft drinks like Coke Zero or whatever kind of thing, as opposed to picking up water, because I think it's a boring drink or whatever, right? And I'm just not in the habit of doing it. And to be honest, the only reason why I have this glass of water really that I'm drinking while we're talking is probably so my throat doesn't go dry from the cup of coffee that I just drank before we came on here, basically, which is a real problem. Okay, so how do I crack the code, Sarah? How do I build a water drinking habit?
So I think the initial step is really truly understanding the why. And why is it relevant for you? Because, right, like, as I mentioned, you have to have a willingness to change. Like, we all know why we should be eating healthy, why we should be drinking our water. But really understanding why it's relevant to me, so that when the days get tough or when I really want to drink a coffee and then a soft drink afterwards, that I know how to battle my, I call them gremlins, battle my mental gremlins to do what I know is best for myself and for my health. So one of the things that I do with most of my clients is, and by most, I mean all, we dig into like their intention statement or their why. And why are you here to get healthy? And why does this habit or goal relate back to what your ultimate health statement and wellness factors are? Or what? Why are we trying to make changes? So for you, right, like when you think about water, like why is it healthy? Like what? Why should you drink it?
For one, the very first one that comes to mind is to avoid dehydration. But actually, the minute I say that, I have to kind of go, well, actually, why is it a bad thing to become dehydrated? And I think the way that affects me is in terms of maybe energy levels, for example, and then actually my ability maybe to exercise effectively is the word I want to use. You know, like if I do quite a lot of running, and again I'm theorizing a lot here because I'm just throwing out stuff that comes into my head. But like, you know, just today I take my two dogs out running with me. They run me, to be honest. So like they're alongside me and then dragging me along. No, I'm joking. But like today it's a bit of a stickier, hotter day. Granted, I went out at a point in time in the day, which was earlier than it was when I took them out yesterday, which is later in the evening. So it's a bit cooler, but still, like, I don't know. I just today felt heavier and I felt like, and also, I mean, this, I'm crossing over into other things here, but like, I haven't eaten so much bread lately, and I felt lighter. Whereas I've eaten quite a bit of bread today and I felt a bit heavier and stodgier when I was running around with them. But so dehydration is one thing. And I want to say like just general brain health as well. I feel like I can think clearer when I'm hydrated. So those are a few things that come to mind.
Yeah. When I hear you share that, right? Like it's performance, it's brain health and having energy. But then I would encourage you to be like, okay, well, those are great performance factors for your health. But why do you really need to be healthy? How does energy and brain health help you show up for the people and the things in your life that matter most? And that's where most people start to dig deep and realize like, okay, yeah, you're right. I should be drinking this water to have enough energy and brain clarity to show up for my family and play presently and have that longevity factor. And when we start to connect to that, right, what your true values are, not necessarily a workout, not, you know, having the best body composition, and you're tied into that loop factor, usually you reach for the water, right? I'm going to drink mine now as I say it.
Yeah.
And that's for me, right? Like I, for my longevity, knowing what my health factors are with my father and being a family person, every action step I do, it pulls back to me showing up as my healthiest version of myself, knowing that I'm trying to not just add years to my life, I'm trying to have quality to my years. And I think connecting that way will help.
Thank you. You've talked about your dad a couple of times. Is he still with us, Sarah?
Unfortunately, no. He passed away. This is actually, I think this is going on 10 years, nine years this year. He passed from a stroke.
And it was the stroke that you mentioned earlier.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, obviously, you know, and a lot of my listeners know that I'm someone that's come to this platform and created it because of a transformative event in my life through losing my son. And I'm just, I think, is what I'm hearing from you, is that that life event, very traumatic, I'm sure. Albeit, I'm sure now with the passing of time, as you've evidenced in this conversation, you look back very fondly and positively on all that you and your dad did together through life. Does he still serve then as an inspiration? You know, how does his memory show up for you in the work that you do today?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so I'm an only child for context. So my father and I had a very great relationship, grew up playing sports. He was working night shifts, and no matter what, he showed up to every single one of my games. He was always there. He was sharing his tough love. You know, he stood through every one of my games, like with his arms crossed, like just watching. So I could always find him out of the crowd. But he supported me in like every single way and thing that I did. And so I actually have a tattoo on my shoulder of a dragonfly. So immediately after he passed, I went out to a garden area. And as I was sitting there, this dragonfly like flew right up to me. Like it was kind of that sign, right? I think a lot of people have that feeling and they have a connection with something that now has this reminder of that special person. And so he's my dragonfly. Whenever we see him flying around, my daughter will even say there's Papa B and wave to him. But it's really wild when you like kind of zoom in and are present enough to notice every like milestone or moment where maybe I'm in a decision phase and trying to decide what path I'm going to go. This dragonfly comes buzzing out of nowhere to remind me of, you know, and give me that sign, that assurance. So I would say to your point, yes, my father was an amazing person who encouraged me throughout every phase of my life. And although he is not here in the present, I definitely get that sense that he is here still pushing me along.
Thank you for sharing that. I wanted to ask you, when you work with your clients, your health coaching clients, is it common for them or some of them to present with a motivation that is born out of bereavement or a life event like that?
Yeah, I would say at least over half of my clientele come with a either trauma that is not unpacked yet, or recognition of a life event that has maybe put them down a health path that now needs to be turned. And, you know, in the health coaching field, a part of why I am diligent in having outlets like golf is that you're a partnership with individuals in navigating heavy life moments and helping them unpack layers and habits, right? We're really going to change behaviors. We're unpacking those behaviors and peeling them to recognize, you know, what's happening and going on. So, you know, it can take a lot of mental fortitude and energy. And so that's why I'm so focused on making sure that I pour back into myself, because I'm pouring into people throughout my day to day for sure.
Yeah. Have you ever found yourself almost not prescribing, but recommending golf to any of your health clients? Or do any of them already play it and then it just so happens to come out in conversation in a health coaching environment?
It does. Yeah. Maybe I feel like I lead with that I am golfing, right? Like you can show up on my Instagram handles and see that golf is such a relevant aspect of my life. So it definitely comes up quite often and very easily. And I actually found that, again, probably a good 50%, if not more, of my clientele are golfers. And sometimes I actually have to like kind of steer our conversations. Like if one of my clients golfed over the weekend, they're ready to like give me the play-by-play of the one hole that they like crushed, you know, and they're like, oh, we did that. And I'm like, okay.
Right. Nice. So with meditation, mindfulness, do you practice that? Or are you saying because for some people that is just, it just does, well, I'll hear people say it doesn't work because they really struggle to give themselves fully to it. Are you in that category?
I wouldn't say that I don't do it, but I've tuned into avenues that work for me. So I journal. I have a sauna, an at-home sauna here in my home. And so I have an evening routine where I'm in the sauna. I'm kind of sitting in the calm, trying to quiet my mind. And typically that is me sitting and doing some journaling, maybe some breath work while I'm there. So I don't want to say I negate it because there's 100% total value in mindfulness practice, but it is a difficult task for me because I find it hard with the ongoing to-do list that I have to be able to sit still. And I think that's where a lot of people may recognize or feel there is not value because they're required to be so outside of their element. But it's so important for our health to be like in that slow. But it's also one of those areas that I feel it's hard to quantify. And for a lot of very successful on the go, let's just call them entrepreneurs, business people, you know, having something that's so, I hear woo-woo from a lot of clients, that it's hard to really like bite into that without having structure to it. So that's why I feel like something like golf is like maybe the stepping stone towards that world of mindfulness practice.
That's super interesting. Protein. Like here in the UK, you can't go into a supermarket or into a corner shop or wherever, like a, you know, golf pro shop even now, and there not be protein bars. And I look at a lot of them and I'm kind of like, I have to be honest, like, you know, I was in a petrol station the other day or whatever, like a service station. I was like, I'm hungry. I'm a real one for snacking, Sarah. I was like, okay, well, I'll just go for the protein option because that's good. That's healthy, right? But actually, I'm not totally convinced it always is because it's chocolate. It's like, it's effectively the equivalent of the Mars or the Snickers that I want, but like, or at least that's how I'm perceiving it. So look, I guess I'm maybe just using that example, doing protein a little bit of a disservice, but I'd love for you to tell us a bit about what your experience with protein is and why you perceive that it's getting all this attention in the health and wellness and nutrition arena.
Well, protein might be my buzzword that we might need to use to pull me off of my soapbox here if I start talking too long. Protein is 100% an essential macronutrient. Like it is a stepping stone for health. And when we think about health and longevity, it is muscle. And protein is your building block for muscle, hormones, immunity health, all the things. So why do I think it's getting such a buzz these days? I think it's because our, especially here in the US, the nutrition and diets are not great. Like we have an obesity problem, and a lot of it comes down to protein not being at the forefront of diets. Now, when I switch gears or lenses here, I think protein is essential, but I think that it is now starting to become over marketed. And to your point of protein bars, protein shakes, a lot of processed forms are being marketed as healthy, and it's not really helping solve the problem of improved diets in our people. So when I think of protein, I'm thinking of it coming from natural sources, whether that's plant-based or animal-based. The struggle, I think, with most people, as you said earlier, the 9-to-5, like being able to have some of the sit down and eat a meal, cook your own meal, it's becoming more problematic. And so convenience is starting to win in our diet, which is what's creating this big problem within our food industry. And so protein, I would encourage everyone to make sure that is at the forefront of your diet, but that you should be getting it from real foods. And that comes for all your macronutrients, your protein, your carbs, and your fats. Carbs have such a terrible stigma. I feel so bad for them because I love them. But it all comes back to your food quality. Like, are you eating real food or are you eating consuming processed foods?
That's
a big question.
You know, so glad that you brought up this point around sort of obesity and sort of that point. I mean, just to reassure you, for want of a better word, you may have heard, I don't know if you listened to it, Sarah, but you know, about 3 months ago, I attended this international golf and health conference. And one of the speakers was, she was the former chief medical officer for Scotland, where I hail from. And we're the same in Scotland. Generally, there is clearly an issue with, she said, I think it was something like 60 something percent of the adult population of Scotland are either overweight or obese. Right. And so if I then also think about, and this is why I'm so glad you brought it up and which has reminded me to ask you about this, because like I say, I have family in Florida. I go to Florida every so often, every year or two. I do have a bit of a difficult relationship with food sometimes. There's a history of eating disorder in my family, and I kind of, so that amongst other things makes me, and also I'm a recovering alcoholic as well. So like, I've kind of got a certain thing about my own behaviors and sort of, I'm a bit sensitive about it, but anyway, I digress. Portion sizes. See, when I come to Florida, I'm like, I am in my element right now. Feed me all this amazing food. Like, take me to the Cheesecake Factory and take me to Cracker Barrel and whatever kind of thing, you know, and I will eat my body weight full of goodness stroke, not goodness, clearly, you know. And I guess, like, given where you operate, the part of the world in which you operate in, where, as you say, obesity is a problem or portion sizes are so big, like, how do you deal with that? How do you penetrate that? That's got to be a big issue that you're up against when you're dealing with coaching clients, right?
100%. The reality is, it's almost like our environment is not set up for us to be successful. And it's almost like, if you are making healthy choices and you are trying to, you know, navigate health habits that we should all have, you're going against the grain. Like, there's almost taboo even to it. So I use an example. When I was teaching, I was known to like carry my gallon jug of water everywhere. and when we would have all of these like teacher appreciation events, like, I oftentimes wouldn't eat, and people would say, oh, are you on a diet? And I was like, no, but donuts and pastries are not like the way I start my day. Like, that's not an indulgence. That's more of an indulgence than, you know, a staple food. But like, our environments, portions, all of that are not set up to really be truly what we need. And so what I find is that, you know, I'm able to penetrate supporting groups of people. So like, I'm associated with my CrossFit gym, and a lot of the times the people within those communities are very health focused and have a lot of mirrored values around health and nutrition. And so that's like a stepping stone in. And, you know, I like to think our communities have a ripple effect. And so if I can help that community of, let's say, 200, they're going to ripple out to another 5 to 10 family members, people they work with. And so for me, that's kind of my approach, is I'm going to target and support the people that are closest to my community and hope that the ripple effect happens. And it has for me. I've got many parents or coworkers, or you live in my neighborhood of my friend. And so that's how I found you. And so that ripple effect is happening, but it is really hard to go against the grain, really, with anything you're doing in life. But I
especially like what you said there about the power of the group, you know, and the influence on the group. Because I guess just naturally, when you're working with someone one-to-one, you know, that it's really on that person to really own it and take personal accountability. But that is why, for instance, I'm sure with CrossFit or any time I do like spin class, like that's kind of interesting now, because I've kind of got away from that with my Peloton bike, because I'm doing that individually in the house and I do miss that group connection. But if I think about the energy that you get and the kind of the in being in group settings, and like you say, you can it sounds like you can have impact at scale potentially, just by the natural sort of influence that a group has on its members. Let's talk about the marker locker, because that's, I think, the only part of what I really wanted to chat to you about today that we haven't yet covered. So what's the marker locker?
My turn to take the pitch. The boys always tell me that I'm up. So here we go. So the marker locker, it is a patented product that basically makes your storage for ball markers convenient. It's secure. And also quite swaggy and stylish. So it was created with the intention of kind of having that nostalgia of like an old school locker, right? You store all your things. It used to be kind of like how you showcased your personality back in the day, you know, in high school, middle school. but we all know like ball markers are fairly precious, and, you know, they have good meaning. You pick them up when you're traveling. Maybe someone gifts you one. And so they've been stored in like pouches, Ziplocs, in the bottom of your golf bag, and you prick your finger on the tee to get them. And my husband got the idea. Actually, it sparked when he was doing the laundry and heard the ball marker jingling around in the bottom, forgot to put it away. So out came the marker locker, which has been sitting behind me. We've got 7 colors in NCAA, and I obviously go with the girly pink. That's my option. And as mentioned, stores all
amazing.
Your
Look at markers. That. That's quite a full one as well. You've got plenty in there. Yeah. So talk me through.
My business partner will love that.
I was going to say, that's the one that my eyes are really drawn in on. Talk me through what's in the locker. Talk us through what's in the locker.
In the locker, obviously I have at the tippy top here. I'll start there. So we've got push spring-loaded for your poker chips. So obviously I have my business card.
Love it.
Obviously,
love
whenever
that.
We're at the golf course, we keep those all loaded up so we can pass it along. Inside, I have some of my fun, like just like girly flared different options. We have our own, our little T logo, obviously in pink. This is my birdie girl hair tie ball marker holder, because every girl needs their ball marker holder for while they're playing. Some other fun ones, but I think my spotlight ones I have here in the door. So this one is our business partner, Scott. We call him Elmer. He's the glue. He has his hands in all the numbers, all the things. So we got him this year. It was like a funny picture of him. He'll love me, hate me for this, but one of a favorites. And then this one is of Cabot in Florida here. They just built that course a couple of years ago. My husband and his buddies all played it for like a golf tournament that they do every year called the Lasters, and picked that up for me. So it was kind of like one of my first fun ones that he gifted me. And then this one is made by Golf Life Metals. He made it for us. It says Marker Mamas, our golf handle for the wives of the Marker Locker. And on the back has JJ, my daughter's nickname, and my initials on the back. So obviously super special meaning on that one. Yeah. Now it's all showcased in one spot.
The one that's the hair bobble thing. Like, so what, the marker goes on the... Get out of here.
Yeah, you ready for the demo?
Yeah, let's do the demo, yeah. I'm thinking of getting one of those for my wife.
So you have it, like, in your hair. Yeah, in your hair, or, like, even on your wrist, like, you got your hair down, and it goes right on top. So, like, while you're playing, super convenient, you can just pull it on and off. And then, end of the round, out we go, and now we're in our safe spot.
Here's me saying I'm going to get one for my wife. I mean, hello, I can use it, most definitely. Well, listen, I'm going to model my green one that you very kindly sent me.
Yes.
And I went for green because it's sort of, you know, GYH. I deliberately cut, you know, coordinated the t-shirt for the sake of this demo today. But it's not very full at the moment because admittedly, I haven't got around to populating it full of all the, because I haven't got around to clearing out my golf bag, which is like you say, part of the whole reason you created this thing. But right now I've got that one that you gave me, and I've got a couple in here. One which isn't actually technically a golf marker, but as you know, with coins or markers, they can become golf markers if you want them to. This is a 2-year sobriety coin that my wife gave me. But that's the thing, right? Like, I'm 6 years sober in July and I still have these kicking around. And then this one, which is a copper one, let me get it out of here, which, note to listeners, if you have copper ball markers, they get dirty quite quickly. So you want to get that sort of brass copper cleaner out and make that look shiny. But I've got one of the GYH logos on there. Which again, I don't know if you know the story behind our logo, Sarah, but it's meant to be a chromosome with a golf tee through the middle, because my son had a rare genetic disorder that meant he was missing a chromosome. So, and actually on the back, to partly denote my Christian faith, but also it's got his name in sort of English across the horizontal part of the cross, but then the Scottish Gaelic spelling of it that cuts through the middle. So it's, as my priest likes to say, it's like a window to Christ, but at the same time, it's, it's my way of remembering Innes. And I'm a big one on nostalgia. I'm a big one on memories. And it's a healthy thing. It is, I mean, I haven't read science or research necessarily that says that, I'm sure it's out there, but I've not read it. But what I always remember, and the reason why I asked you that question at the start of this conversation around what's your first memory of golf, I have a guy at the RNA, the Global Governing Body for Golf, a guy called John Kemp to thank for that, because he gave this talk in Edinburgh at that conference. And, you know, it's a golf and health conference. I thought, if people at the RNA are talking about that, then clearly it shows. So for me, I will always promote or talk about any product that has... For me, it affords me like an opportunity to sort of, you know, when I see a marker like that one that's got my son's name on it and it stares back at me, I'm a big one for signs and for, you know, like your dragonfly, for instance, as well, you know. So
and I'm with you. I'm a big believer in that, like seeing, again, here's a mindfulness practice that I can connect with. It's, you know, having nostalgia, having memorabilia pieces from trips, vacations, things that evoke a positive response are powerful in that centering of your peace and energy. So I love
absolutely.
That.
Another thing I noticed as well, you've got these in various different colors, like you said, but I noticed you do a collection of them these days that are like branded around football teams and things like that as well. So how's that gone down? Because again, people are really, you know, people just have an allegiance to the badge, don't they?
Oh yeah, they sure do. Yeah. So to speak to like my clients golfing, I have two recent clients who purchased lockers, and one of them was a University of Kentucky. Another one was a University of Florida, and each of them had golf bags to match that were collegiate, you know, noted. So they put their ball mark or their marker locker onto their bags. And I was like, holy moly, like you're like diehard, not just like a fan, like you're full fledged top to bottom now. So, but it's going well. We have collegiate, licensing. So we are starting there, hopefully expanding into other sports and markets, but we're doing custom one-off lockers. So for, you know, businesses or creators in this golf space that want to have like their one of a kind, we're doing that. And then we are also working with a few golf tournaments to create custom lockers for them. And we are doing specialty drops now. So that was something we started back around like when the waste management happened. We did a custom locker drop around then. So we have another one in the works. Hopefully that will all work out on a timely manner. So yeah, so we're starting to get a little bit more into the custom avenue, and obviously, you know, you grow as you go. So we're starting to, you know, hit other markets and make connections to hopefully reach more people and hopefully get across the pond a little easier for shipping. That's in the works. So right now, just in the States is where we're shipping, but fingers crossed, we're hoping within a few months we're going to have that.
Yeah. Has kind of things that are going on in the world, let's just say at the moment, had an impact on that? Has it made it harder?
It's coming with a few hurdles. Yeah. Like navigating increasing costs, obviously, but I feel like that's just across the board in all areas of life right now. Right. So it's maybe put a little bit of a brake on our momentum that we had. And we're also in the works of modifying the design a little bit based on customer feedback and coming out with different models. So that's kind of where we've been pouring a lot of our time and efforts into. So we're excited for that. Hopefully by the end of the year for holiday shopping season, we'll have that in the works. If not, 2026, big things will be happening.
2026 will be the year. Amazing. Fantastic. I have really, really loved this conversation. Like I say, I just kind of feel like we're only just getting started and scratching the surface and some of the topics, but that's always the way on a podcast, you know, so I think I will have to get you on again some other time. Before we go, Sarah, where can we find you? Where can my listeners find you? Both Marker Locker, Fitzpatrick's Wellness Coaching.
Yeah, with the Marker Locker, you can find me at the Marker Locker on Instagram. We're on Threads, Facebook. We are on TikTok. In regards to health and wellness coaching, Fitzpatrick Wellness Coaching. It's a long one to type, but you can find me on Facebook and Instagram there. Also on TikTok a little bit, just trying to show up in different modalities. And then you can connect with me. I would love to hear from any of you on Messenger and such as well. And then I do have an account called Marker Mama's Golf with me and another wife of the Marker Locker team.
Thank you so much again. And yeah, excited to see how everything develops for you in all of your business ventures.
I appreciate that. It was a pleasure. And as you said, we got just to the top, so I'm more than happy to come back on and, you know, go on my soapbox, talk about protein and electrolytes and everything else.
Nice. All right. I look forward to that. Thanks, Sarah. Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you like what you've heard today and want to hear more content like this, then please head over to golfyourselfhealthy.com and subscribe now. Until our next episode, always remember to embrace the rough and forever cherish the fairways.